Welcome to Catspina Music. In this episode, I talk with Chris J. McLaughlin, musician, voiceover talent, audio engineer, and paramedic. His journey speaks to the power of connections, resiliency during transition, and how our motivation is driven by the goals we set for ourselves.
When we met, I was working at Starbucks. I just earned a master's degree.
And congratulations. Can I get you a latte?
Pretty much. And, yeah. You know, a big part of that was also the space I was in my life. I always loved the barista experience and going to Starbucks and that community. And so I think what was really unexpected was that experience led me to some really amazing people, and you being one of them. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about what transition means for you.
Right. So when we met, I was, and still am, a paramedic.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in a completely different place than what I kind of think of as my real, myself, my creative musical self. Going way back, I guess I can go way back to my start of, I went to Berklee College of Music and got a bachelor's in music production and engineering, MP&E at the time. I'm not sure if it's still called that.
Mm-hmm.
Met a bunch of crazy people there that just guided me through life. I sometimes feel like every step of the way was not a mistake, but this interesting, we say, there's no coincidences where you end up roommates with somebody who has a friend who's a great drummer, ends up in your band, and he ends up being my best friend for life, Hugh Elliott. He's out in LA now cutting. He's a video editor and producer for a bunch of cool stuff. I think he's working for Discovery Channel right now. Anyway, his girlfriend at the time, Eve Nelson, who is just currently an unbelievable talent out in California, producing Chaka Khan and doing all sorts of amazing live television productions. She said to me, "Why don't you just come to New York? I'll hook you up." And based on that sentence, I dragged my wife and myself to New York City after a quick visit to LA, which I just didn't like at the time, and got an apartment. And when I was waiting for my interview for the first studio where I was going to engineer at, which back in the day, you if you were lucky enough, you became an assistant engineer and didn't get paid for a couple of years, made coffee, not quite at the barista level there, I might add. But for a couple of years. And then if you're lucky enough, you become an assistant engineer and get paid and help the engineers that came into the studio. I was lucky enough to get an interview with a studio, Interface Studios, I remember the name of it. And so the day, 5 days after I moved into New York City, making zero money, waiting for my big interview, I got a call from the woman I was supposed to interview with, Kate. I said, "Hey, Kate, what's up?" And she said, "Well, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm waiting to have an interview with you." And she paused and said, "Oh, yeah, I forgot about that." And she was wondering if I could engineer a session for her because her engineer called out sick. And of course, I said yes. And I had no idea what I was doing on that particular console. But I went in and made it through the day. So from there, I continued to work with Eve Nelson and became a jingle writer, if you will, an underscore writer. We call an underscore a jingle without singing, if you will. So all of the music that you don't hear underneath the television commercial, that was what I was doing for many years.
Wow.
A million people. Worked with Marshall Grantham and John Russo at Russo Grantham Productions. That was my career for probably 18 years. I can't even say the number. Wow. They were amazing to me, great people.
I was just curious about that. How do you kind of came to terms with that transition?
So super. So back to when I got to New York, my goal was to be a rock star.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to be in a band. I came out of Berklee. I worked my way through Berklee as a top 40 rock and roll guy, you know, playing keyboards in the band. So I kind of followed Eva over to New York and my buddy Hugh as well, and ended up in writing jingles. I thought I'd be an engineer working on demos for my rock and roll band, but these opportunities presented themselves. I wasn't really a trained composer, if you will, at the time, but Eve got me involved with this group, and I had the skills. And at the time, technology was becoming such a role in being a writer. So there was the days of writing, the composer would write a demo and then go to the studio and present it to the engineer, and the players would get together and do their band, do a band thing. And
yeah.
You know, now it was becoming, well, we're doing a jingle. Can you do the whole thing with the drum machine, which is now, you know, pretty big in, you know, into play here, technology synthesizers. So coming from the engineering background, I had all of these tools that if you gave me the room with the toys in it, I could put things together, you know. And
yeah.
I actually became sort of one of the guys in our company that could program drums that sounded like drums, you know, like a drummer was playing them. There's a big difference between going boom, kick, boom, chick, boom, chick. And at the time, and it's hard for probably the younger generation to know this, but we had to kind of fake groove, which was really hard to do. And some would argue impossible, and I would agree probably, but we did pretty good because the new technology.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you get a snare drum sound, it sounded like crap now, but back then it was the first thing you ever heard. It was like, holy cow. You know, when I was in high school, I ended up being an intern at Blue Jay Recording Studios in Carlisle, right. Massachusetts.
Wow.
And I was mowing their lawn when I'm going back and I'm doing the backstory here. Like,
you know,
shows I'm watching like Ozark. Anyway.
Right. Right. Like what ignited the passion for you to get involved with the audio. Yeah.
Right. So I was mowing their lawn and I looked in this window and I saw this amazing studio, which I think it actually just went out of business. I think the Backstreet Boys owned it last.
Oh my gosh.
So I talked to Bob Lawson. I can't believe I remember these names without research. I promise I didn't do research. So Bob Lawson was my employer, paying me $5 an hour at the time. I think I was in ninth grade. I said, hey man, I know nothing about what's going on in there, but I want to be in there. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I loved being in the studio. I loved the energy of it. I probably learned everything I know now about being in a studio in 6 months when I knew nothing about it. But mm-hmm. I was aligning, you know, synchronized 2-inch 24 track machines. I didn't really have any idea what the hell I was doing. But I knew how to do it, and to do it right, I knew I had to make the line go there, and I tweaked it with the things. It was incredible. So I learned a lot about recording there.
There's such a value in that, and being able to sort of find your way through the arms of and the shoulders of greatness, and that really speaks to how you developed your own approach too.
Absolutely. I'm just remembering, as you speak about mentoring, especially. So when I make it to New York City, I think this might have been one of the trips I made down, which is important. I had to make some trips around the country just to see what I liked in those early days. And I threw my friend Eve, I was in the studio. I went and met Marshall Grantham. And they were very welcoming to me. I was very lucky. But another gentleman, Shane Keister, who's a big time country arranger and songwriter and an amazing piano player. He played with Elvis. I'm dropping names here. I know, but I can't help myself.
Yes.
So Shane was working in the then Studio C. And Marshall said, hey, maybe Shane would be interested. If you want, you could sit in for a day and just watch him write a spot. And we were all using Synclaviers at the time. So Shane was a big Synclavier user, one of the original digital recorders, samplers, you know, that, came out in the 80s. And Shane was so cool to me. He just kind of, come on in, buddy. He had a little bit of a Southern accent. Come on in, bud. Have a seat. I'll show you what I'm doing. And I had no idea what was going on in there, but Shane was so cool. And he made me feel comfortable in this massive city I was visiting and in this studio that was incredible. And he showed me I forget the spot he was working on, but he was banging it out. What a talented guy and what a nice guy, you know? So I think the point is to get out there and meet people like that, and somehow through this person, through that, you meet this person, through that person, through this person, and suddenly you get to somebody who's going to help you. And I ended up staying in that studio for many years, and it was an incredible experience, learning as I went, writing some really cool spots competitively, writing music competitively. What a concept, you know? I was writing a spot with five other people. Unbelievable. I'm writing against Steve Nelson. I'm writing against Shane Keister at one point. These people
are your friends.
And here I was, you know, and every now and then I win one, you know, because that's how it works, you know? And it was, I learned from them both, everybody you learn from. You know?
Right. Right.
It was incredible there.
There is a piece of that, like, you know, you just kind of are fueled by each other, you know, even though it's a healthy competition.
So back when I was doing jingles, I got involved with voiceovers by accident, right? So I'm the engineer doing some engineering because I was doing a bunch of different things at Back Pocket Studios. So I would be writing one day, I might be engineering a voiceover session the next day, I might be mixing with Marshall Grantham a spot. We would mix all the elements together and get ready for air. So what would happen is inevitably back in the day, they would have a scratch voiceover on the video on the video portion that was already cut, right? So we have a 30-second spot. So the video is complete, and now they want somebody to do a scratch voiceover before they hire the real talent. So anybody want to just run in there and do us a favor and just lay down the voiceover, I would always raise my hand. I would read the voiceover. And sure enough, after time, once in a while, the producers and the directors we would call it demo love. They would fall in love with my voice or whoever did the scratch. And that's how I became a member of Screen Actors Guild. So, and I got involved with doing voiceovers, which quite honestly paid a lot more money to be on a national television spot as the voiceover than it did to write the music for the same spot, which on occasion I would end up doing both. Very rarely. That was sort of the grand prize, right? If you won the spot and you're on the voiceover in some way. So I got into voiceovers, which now leads me back to where I ended up as my music kind of, my jingle music career kind of faded down, but my voiceover career kind of faded up, and which is an incredibly hard, all of this is an incredibly hard areas to get into. It's not like you just decide to become a jingle writer or you just decide to become a voiceover artist. Although nowadays it's much easier to get your voice and your music out there. We call it just enough music sometimes, but I would find myself as the jingle business for me faded down a bit and the work got a little bit less and less, I decided to focus on my voiceover career, which meant, what can I do? What do I do when I wake up in the morning and I have no jobs? What do I do when I don't have a jingle to go into the city to write? I have nothing to do except get in trouble. So this motivation is the deadline is the motivation. You have to get out of bed and piece together, maybe for what I did is piece together some of my older stuff that I did, make up stuff. I would go into sit in front of the microphone and write my own silly spots that weren't for anything, but nobody knows that when it's on a reel, and I'd cut them together. Yeah. So I'm honing my engineering and editing skills. I'm honing my voice in front of the microphone. I was starting to get, you know, to know what was good and what not so good and what was working. So every day it's hard. You get up and do something that's meaningless almost, but it's not. It's totally meaningful to get up and do that and try to get in front of the microphone. Try to get your guitar on your lap and write a song you hate. It's still, you wrote a song. Yeah. Next thing you know, that song you hate is going to be number one on the charts. It's inevitable, right?
Yeah. I mean, I remember you said that to me once too when we were chatting at Starbucks. Like, good cat, just keep writing. Even if you don't love it, just get it out. Just keep doing it.
Right. You're going to be doing, it's sort of a friend meets a friend meets a friend, and that guy's going to get you a job. Or you're going to do this and resumes. Another thing I love to talk about in our business. Everybody has to have a resume, right? But I'll tell you what, I've never had to use a resume, I don't think, in my entire life, except when I became a paramedic. I'll talk about that maybe in a second. But in music and in voiceovers, everybody still, you got to have a resume, bro. Get your resume together. So guess what I did? I sat down, I got my resume together, I'm working on my resume, and guess what? I got a voiceover job before I send it out.
There you go.
That's what happens? You got to be doing something that you don't want to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to be doing? Do I sound like Matthew McConaughey there a little bit? I hope so. You know what I'm saying? All right. All right. You got to be doing something that you don't like to be doing, like driving a Cadillac.
Exactly.
So every time I end up doing something that I am thinking, I don't need to be doing this, but I'm going to do it. Somebody told me to put together a reel. I think the same thing happens to me when I'm putting together reels. I'm putting together a reel. I send it out to 10 people. And then a person I didn't send it to that I worked with 6 years ago calls me up that day and says, what are you doing? I got a spot I need you to read.
Wow.
And I do it and I get the job. It happens. So you just have to keep plugging. You got to have that deadline, which sometimes the deadline is at 7 o'clock the next morning.
Yeah.
Sometimes the deadline is unknowable. Yeah. It's your motivation.
Yes. Yes.
No, but it's so true. It made me think about that quite a bit. And yeah, it's absolutely true. So I got up this morning with your inspiration because I knew we were going to be talking, and I went through some reels and found some music, some voiceover stuff, some music I did. So it got me going.
And it's been a really interesting time to see how we can just keep ourselves going and dive in and dig deeper and reach those goals that we set for ourselves.
That's for sure, Kat. I agree with you. And it is hard. And people that are, you know, I hate to just separate people, but you have creative people and you have not so creative people. I don't want to say uncreative. I think everybody has some creativity in them, whether they ever find it in their lifetime or not, I think is the question. Other people find it right away. I think I'm one of those somewhere, you know, above the middle line. But we're both in that same boat. So along with this uncontrollable desire to be creative in one way or another, whether it's drawing on walls or playing a guitar or playing piano or using your voice to do something, it's hard for other people to understand how much joy we get from it, but also how much sadness it can create within us.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes for me, I have to keep busy. I have to keep going, doing something. When my jingle career started to fade, just things changed. I'm not blaming the world or the universe,
mm-hmm.
but technology changed. And we went from being in a studio every day with bands, the best musicians in New York City and sometimes the world. I mean, we were working with Chris Bode before he came Chris Bode, and Andy Schnitzer, maybe the best saxophone player, certainly the best saxophone player I know. Anyways, love the name dropping, don't you? Some of the best people ever that inspired me so much to try to be better at whatever I do.
Yes.
It all faded and the technology kind of took over. Everybody could do more stuff at home, and the big studios like I was working at were really hit hard, especially the commercial studios. There's still a few left, but not many. So I had to make ends meet. I had to do something. I had to keep going, or I was going down a pretty dark road. And I caught myself, got out of the city, and I decided to completely change gears for a little bit. I went back to school and I went to, and I became a paramedic. What? Oh my God. EMS? I don't know. I always wanted to be a doctor when I was in high school, except I wasn't smart enough and I was better at playing the piano. So I went to Berkeley. But so I went back to school, and sure enough, I could still learn in this brain. It still took stuff in and fell in love with that. That was my passion, learning about medicine and people. And now I'm out in the streets. So I get to help people almost on a daily basis. Right now, incredibly difficult for a lot of people in EMS, including myself. I don't want sympathy, but it's a hard time.
Yes.
But as I've been in paramedicine for maybe 8 years now, I'm having the desire to get back to my playing and back to my creativity. So it's all one thing, right? Kat, I mean, it's like,
this
is how I met Kat. I met Kat as a paramedic walking in, this girl behind the counter, instant connection. What are you up to? You know, I'm a songwriter. And probably at first I was like, oh, great, another songwriter. Great, super, just what we need. But then, you know, we became friends, I'd like to say. And here we are, like one of my best friends that I love to hear from. Look how life works. It's incredible. I become a paramedic and I meet Kat, who is drawing more creativity out of me. So thanks, Kat.
I'm inspired by inspired people. That is why I do what I'm doing. And I've noticed in my creative journey, and ever since I was a young girl, the power of this medium, music, creativity, that we can reach people on levels we never knew existed. Whether it's through the direct piece that we're working on or through just this conversation. What are you up to? How are you doing? And that for me is so powerful. So powerful.
And you never know where it's going to come from. That power, that immediate emotion. It can come from, it's usually for me coming from someplace unexpected, like a person that I meet at Starbucks, so is the lesson here, go to Starbucks? I don't think that's the actual lesson, but it is about being out and about. You can't get out of bed and stare at your cell phone all day. You can't go on Facebook all day. It's just not going to happen that way. You have to be out and about. Now, in this day and age, out and about, maybe it does include a portion of Facebook and a portion of Instagram and whatever, but use them to your benefit, right? Right, Kat? I mean, there's fun to be had. I have fun on Facebook. Of course I do. But there's also, these things are amazing tools that, you know, are available to you as a songwriter and me as a voiceover talent, and be selective, but get out there, whether it's...
Yes.
Again, here's another example. It just struck me. Setting up your website. You have to have a website. You just have to have it. Just freaking do it. You know, I got to wait for this. I got to do that. No, you got to get your website up. Put your name on the top of the bar, in the address bar. If it's a picture of you saying, I write songs, or if it's a picture of you saying, I am a voiceover talent, here's my phone number. Do it. And then build it from there. Every day or every week, write something for it, or make it happen. Put a new reel up. It took me years to get mine up. And now it's up. www.chrisjmclaughlin.com. That's www.chrisjmclaughlin.com. Anyway.
And you know,
so it looks like an insert.
You got it. And then, you know, it's so great. You just said one more thing. Talk about, like, as we've been communicating and going through all this, just so many people have been flashing through my mind and some of my journey. I think a big common theme in this conversation is connection. And another person that I met through a boss, and she hooked me up with a guy named Peter Darmy, who was on Natalie Cole's record as an engineer. He produced the song "Nobody Gonna Break My Stride." Can't hold me.
Nobody gonna break my stride.
Yeah, Peter and I are still in contact to this day. And another line that stuck with me for, as you were saying, just get yourself out there. He said to me, "Kat, this is 07 when I was just trying to start this journey." He said, "The world isn't going to discover you.
That's right.
You have to go out and discover it."
That's right. That's exactly right.
And that was scary because I had a lot of insecurities, a lot of things that I was trying to work on. It's always a people person, but things that I noticed, even, you know, my grandma would point out to me, "Kat, you know, have more confidence, get out there. And I always thought, like, there was a part of me that felt conceited about it. And so even me just talking to you at the store, as I got like 20 customers, you know, juggling, and I wanted to hear you. I wanted to hear, you know, where your passions lie. And while I was in a hard place, it was the best thing for me. And so it was a very unexpected meeting, but there are no coincidences and everything that we've talked about. And there's more, like you said, there's always going to be a follow-up here. So I want to hear about your projects and things coming down the pike for you. Loving your website. I love all the things that you're putting together. And now's the time. If we want to just end with one thing, and then thank you so much for being a part of this podcast. I appreciate you so much.
Well, likewise, Kat. You're amazing. And thanks for asking me to do it. I hope somebody gets one little thing out of it, and then it'll be worth it, right? I'll end with that applies to us. Every stranger can be your new best friend, so don't blow people off. Listen to what people say, right?
Yeah.
And you never know who your next best friend's going to be.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. And let's talk soon.
You're awesome.
Swipe my silly reel so people will laugh at the end. That might be fun, right? For all you voiceover and music people out there, you might take a few lessons from this. This could be an example of something really cool and creative. It also could be an example of putting way too much into one reel. You decide.
I'm inspired by inspired people. If you want to learn more about the process, creativity, and the journey, check out my website, catspinamusic.com. Thank you again for listening.
So you hold on, hold on.